Our New Testament reading comes from the book of Acts, in the 17th chapter, verses 22 to 31. Then Paul stood in front of the Areopagus and said, "Athenians, I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through the city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you. This God who made the world and everything in it, he who is Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mortals life and breath and all things. From one ancestor he made all nations to inhabit the whole earth, and he allotted the times of their existence and the boundaries of the places where they would live, so that they would search for God and perhaps grope for him and find him, though indeed he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, 'For we too are his offspring.' Since we are God's offspring, we ought not to think that the deity is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of mortals. While God has overlooked the times of human ignorance, now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed the day on which he will have the world judged in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed, and of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead." Now, before I go on, I've noticed every time I have been able to come to worship that when Fred walks up here for the sermon, he carries this device, this electronic notebook that he lays on and he turns this and then he does it from there. And last week when I was here on Jody's last Sunday, Jody had an electronic notebook. And there she was doing this thing. And I thought, I can't come up here without a notebook. So I brought my notebook. Faye and I agree on this, don't we, Faye? Just a moment. Will you then join me in a moment of prayer? Amen. On March 31st, 1943, excuse me, I don't know what's going on in my throat this morning, the first musical written by the legendary team of Rodgers and Hammerstein opened on Broadway. The title of that musical was Oklahoma, and it went nonstop for 2,212 performances. That was then followed by national tours and in 1955 an Academy Award-winning motion picture. Many of the songs became nationwide hits. Some are still sung. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, Surrey with a Fringe on Top. People would say we're in love in the title song, Oklahoma. But there's another song in that musical that's remarkable in its own right, perhaps not known quite as well. It's titled Kansas City. And it says, "I went to Kansas City on a Friday. By Saturday, I learned a thing or two. But up till then, I didn't have an idea of what the modern world was coming to. Why, I counted 20 gas buggies going by themselves almost every time I took a walk. And then I put my ear to a Bell telephone, and a strange woman started to talk. What's next?" The chorus says, "Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go. They went and built a skyscraper 7 stories high, about as high as a building ought to grow. Everything's like a dream in Kansas City, better than a magic lantern show. You can turn on the radiator whenever you want heat. With every kind of comfort, every house is all complete. Why, you could walk to the privies in the rain and never wet your feet. They've gone about as far as they can go." Now, if those kids were still here, we would have to stop and explain what a privy is. But if you've ever lived in the Midwest, and I think most of us have been around long enough, we know what a privy is. 1943 was 71 years ago. June and I turned 10 that year. We and all of you know that not only had they not gone as far as they could in Kansas City, in fact, during the making of that musical, they built a 12-story skyscraper in Kansas City. But we know that humankind will likely never, ever reach the end of how far we can go. Today, the tallest building in the world is in Dubai. Stands 2,722 feet tall. Not, I don't have a clue how many stories that would be. We live in an age where just absolutely incredible scientific advancements take place every day. In fact, we have learned, we continue to have to learn, a whole new vocabulary that's needed to talk about all the new discoveries. It wasn't long ago, for instance, that the word gigabyte hadn't been invented yet. It wasn't necessary, because neither had recording devices been invented yet for computers that could store 1,000 bits of information. That's what a gigabyte is. And then it was tens of thousands of bytes. Now, my new computer has a hard drive that I had to learn another new word. It has a terabyte capacity. That's 1,000 gigabytes, 1,000 times 1,000 or however many thousand, a terabyte. Now there's multiple terabytes. Have you ever heard the acronym GRIN, G-R-I-N? It stands for, the G stands for genetic engineering, which means, among other things, that the day is actually drawing near when parents will choose not only the gender of their babies, but their height, the color of their hair and eyes, whether their baby-to-be will likely be a rocket scientist or an artist. Robotics means machines with artificial intelligence that will be used everywhere to do jobs better than humans with real intelligence that's not quite as good. I is for information technology. You know what Facebook is? Twitter? All those other LinkedIn, on and on and on it goes. Well, this information technology, what we now think is so remarkable. Well, that's another, by the way, another new vocabulary word. Do you know what hashtag is? You know, it looks like a game you're going to, huh?
Just started that hashtag.
Just hashtag, that's right. It looks like a tic-tac-toe game. This information technology will very soon be the Model T of modern information technology. And nanotechnology, remember that word, nanotechnology. You've got it from the first service, I know. Nanotechnology. You're going to be hearing a lot of that in coming years. Listen to this. It means constructing machines that are so tiny, they deliver messages between the cells in your body and will be able to repair molecules in those cells when needed. Now, besides all that's meant by GRIN, astrophysicists have mapped the curvature of the universe, studied black holes, and determined our universe is trillions of light years larger than anyone ever thought. No, things were not up to date in Kansas City in 1943. And 71 years later, we haven't scratched the surface as far as we can go. Now, one of the spin-offs of this knowledge explosion is a tendency to think that there is no mystery to life anymore, no mystery to the universe anymore, that if you study anything long enough and intelligently enough, and a logical scientific explanation will be found. And so there's a sort of a loss of the sense of what is mystery. Because mystery just seems to be something that'll take a while longer than Kansas City to figure out what makes it happen. In the past, it was common to explain the blanks in our knowledge, the unknowns, by saying, well that's where God is. Only with this incredible explosion of knowledge, the blanks are becoming smaller and smaller, few and far between, and God seems in danger of being squeezed out if we don't find a way to fit him in. Yet the truth is, no matter how much scientific knowledge we acquire, physical reality is never enough to satisfy us. I know that you know that as well as I do. I think perhaps this moment in history there is more discontent than there's ever been. There's not a sense of peace and serenity and contentment inside. The human spirit that's in you, is in me, is in all of us, knows There's always more to be revealed. Something out there that is beyond explaining. And our spirits yearn for mystery because we know it's out of mystery that miracles happen. And it is miracles that produce that sense of marvel in us, leaving us astonished and overwhelmed by the wonder of it all, and at last feeling content. And now and then, we encounter an event that can only be described as a mystery, often in unexpected, even humorous ways. For instance, two Catholic nuns were returning to the hospital where they work when they ran out of gas. A passing driver noticed their dilemma, offered to siphon gas for them from his tank. The problem was he did not have anything to put the gas in. So the nuns searched through their car, and being as how they worked at a hospital, they found a bedpan. And they decided that would have to do. So the man siphoned the gas from his car into the bedpan. And the nuns told the man they could handle the transfer of gas, so he drove away. So the two nuns, now picture this, they're standing beside their car with the tank, you know, open, and they're carefully pouring the gasoline from the bedpan into the car. As they were doing that, a guy in an 18-wheel truck drives by. And he looks again, and he stops, and he rolls down the window. His mouth is hanging open as he watches. He picks up his cell phone. He calls. He says, "Honey, you won't believe this, but we're joining the Catholic Church next week." There is still mystery in this world, in this life. And our souls cry out for it. It was a long time ago, almost 2,000 years, that the Apostle Paul went to the city of Athens. And there at the site called the Areopagus, the place where scholars and teachers from all over came to share their knowledge, Paul made a speech that was designed to get his audience thinking about this yearning for something more. For the Athenians had statues and symbols to stand for every god they could think of, sort of covering all the bases. A god to take care of anger, a god to take care of disasters, a god to take care of this, a god to take care of that. They knew that they hadn't gone as far as they could go with matters of faith. In our text, Paul says, "I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through the city and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.'" You see, if all else failed, the Athenians had structured this so they could fall back on the presence of an unknown God. If we don't have a God to fit, oh, well, this could do it, the unknown God. Kind of a fill in the blanks as you need it. Do you remember what's called the prologue to the Gospel of John? The first beginning of the Gospel of John, the first chapter? That's where it talks about this mysterious Word that was with God in the beginning, and without whom nothing was made that was made. And this Word became flesh so that people could see His glory. John 1:18 says, "No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made Him known." This is not an unknown God. It's a God made known by Jesus Christ. Do you hear the mystery and the miracle that comes out of it? You marvel at something that it just can't be measured. You can't measure this Word that was with God and now is in flesh. Not even by nanotechnology. The prologue to the Gospel of John is meant to give us hope, to inspire us to push on in the faces of life's challenges. There was a motion picture released last year. It was one of the best of the year. The picture was called Gravity. How many of you saw Gravity? Yeah, a lot of you. If you haven't, I urge you to do so. Stars Sandra Bullock as Dr. Ryan Stone, a medical engineer on their first shuttle mission. George Clooney as a veteran astronaut, Matt Kowalski. The film becomes loaded with one wild scene after another when a Russian satellite is blown up and sends pieces of debris flying at them through the universe at 55,000 miles an hour. Remember, there's no atmosphere, nothing to slow it down. And as the film unfolds, their space station is hit by this debris and destroyed. And the two of them are floating in their spacesuits in the vast silence of space. Their only hope before the oxygen runs out is to make their way to a Russian station, not occupied now, that would have an entry vehicle capable of getting them back to Earth. But more disasters hit. And as they reach the station, Kowalski, George Clooney, is lost. He gives himself up, cutting himself loose in order to save Ryan Stone, Sandra Bullock. And we're going to play a short clip from the film. In it, Ryan Stone has given up. Don't start yet. Give me a minute. Ryan Stone has given up. She's alone in the Russian space station, but can't get anything to work. So she reaches up, and she turns off the oxygen. She's going to allow herself to die. Lays back, crosses her arm, and waits to die. The clip is what happens next. Now, thank you.
Check your watch. 13 hours and 11 minutes. Call Anatoly and tell him he's been bumped. It's a little gloomy in here, isn't it?
How did you?
Trust me, tell the story.
What happened?
That's better. I found a little extra battery power. It helps I didn't have you around to distract me. I have to say, I'm glad to see you. I didn't think you were going to make it. Did you find the vodka?
You never told me where.
Oh, well.
Where it was, so.
To Anatoly. Nestorovia. No? All right. Let's get out of here. The Chinese station's about 100 miles. Just a little Sunday drive.
We can't.
Sure we can.
There's no fuel. I tried everything.
Well, there's always something you can do.
I tried everything.
Did you try the soft landing jets?
They're for landing, so.
Well, landing is launching. It's the same thing. Didn't you learn about that in training?
I never got to land the simulator, I told you.
But you know about it.
And I crashed it.
Listen,
every time.
Do you want to go back, or do you want to stay here? I get it. It's nice up here. You can just shut down all the systems. Turn out all the lights. Just close your eyes and tune out everybody. There's nobody up here that can hurt you. It's safe. And what's the point of going on? What's the point of living? Your kid died. That didn't get any rougher than that. Still, it's a matter of what you do now. If you decide to go, then you gotta just get on with it. Sit back, enjoy the ride.
You gotta plant both your feet on the ground and start living life.
How did you get here?
I'm telling you, it's a hell of a story.
Hey, Ryan.
What?
It's time to go home.
That was an experience of mystery. Kowalski had died. And then he's there, and then he's not there. The assumption is that she had a hallucination. Remember, she turned off the oxygen from oxygen deprivation. But that was only part of the experience. We couldn't have time to play more, but there were more challenges equally as overwhelming as that one. But because of her mysterious experience, she was a different person. She was a determined person. She wasn't giving up. She wasn't giving in. You know, it's been pointed out how similar the fictional experience of Dr. Ryan Stone was to the real-life experience of Joseph and Mary as told in Matthew's Gospel. After the birth of Jesus, it says, "Now after they," that was the wise men, "had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night and went to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod." Not much difference between a dream and an imaginary, a hallucination, something, if it was triggered by oxygen deprivation, whatever. Not much difference. In both cases, someone was empowered by this mysterious experience to do what he or she had to do. For Ryan Stone and Gravity, in what seems to be in a different universe, her mysterious hallucination seems to be the way God chose to reach out to her. I can tell you how a quite similar mysterious event impacted my life and that of my family. Most of you know that the ministry is a second career for me. I was in the business world for 13 years. When I felt the call of God to pursue this career, the first thing I had to do was get a college degree. That's required in our denomination, still is, before you can go to seminary. We had 3 children. I had to support our family, so my degree had to be earned at night. I went to work every day, came home, had dinner, and left for school. Got back home about 10 o'clock, studied and did assignments until 2 a.m., got up at 7 the next morning, and did it again. I did that 5 days a week for 6 years. I was 4.5 years into the process, and I was worn out. I was exhausted. Doctors said I was getting ulcers, that I would have severe back issues the rest of my life if I didn't slow down and sleep more. I was going to the California State College in Los Angeles, and I was walking uphill from the parking lot. It was at night, of course, for another class. There were tears in my eyes, partly from fatigue and pain, but mostly because reality was setting in. I could see I wasn't going to make it. I was going to have to give up this calling, this dream of going to the ministry. As I was beginning to think, "I cannot do this anymore," I became aware that my Grandpa Dietz was walking beside me. My father's father, my hero. Let me fix this just a minute. That's been feeling loose all morning. Now I knocked it off. Now I'll have it fixed. Sorry about that. He was really my hero. When he was in his 70s, he had been a baseball player who had to go work in the mines because he could have been a professional baseball player, a major league baseball, but he couldn't make enough money. He had to go work in the mines. Can you imagine that? But he was always the one I could talk to, always there for me. There's only one problem. Grandpa had been dead for over 5 years. And as we walked, he encouraged me, as he always did. He let me know he believed in me and assured me he would be helping me to make it through. It was dark outside. There was not much light in the parking lot. I never turned to look at him. I really didn't need to. I could hear him. I could sense his presence beside me. I don't have any idea how long he walked with me, but as I drew near to the buildings, as in the picture, he was gone. Was I hallucinating in my distress? Was I seeing things, hearing things that weren't there? I don't know. I just know it happened, and that I was never, ever too tired again through the remaining years of college and seminary. By the way, I graduated from college and started seminary exactly 50 years ago this month. The memory of that encounter is as fresh today as it was that day. So is the mystery and the miracles that have followed one after another throughout this career, including the miracle of being here with you today. I can tell you this much, to this very moment, I marvel at the wonder of it all. There's a small book titled Flatland that was written by Edwin Abbott in the 19th century. It was based upon a rather bizarre assumption that a three-dimensional being, in this case a sphere, a round sphere, created a two-dimensional world called Flatland. And the people in Flatland were flat. They had width, they had length, but they had no depth, no height. The sun didn't come up or go down. There was kind of a light around the edges. And the challenge for the sphere who wanted to be connected with the beings in Flatland that he had created, who wanted to help them, the question was, how can a three-dimensional being with height and length and breadth connect to beings that live in a world where there's only length and breadth and no height? So into this two-dimensional world came the three-dimensional sphere who created Flatland. And there was only one way. The sphere would have to voluntarily give up its three-dimensional nature, become a two-dimensional circle. Only then would the Flatlanders be able to understand what their creator was trying to tell them. The story, of course, is an allegory of the Christian faith. The sphere is Jesus Christ, that Logos, the Word, the Divine made incarnate in our limited, moral, frail world. And we are the Flatlanders. We are those who ache to understand more about life and our Creator, but often fall back on superstition and things like horoscopes that are also only two-dimensional, trying to help us reach beyond the stars, we think, but it doesn't. Now, if you think this is too far-fetched a portrayal of our everyday thinking, consider this. The truth is, you know you're three-dimensional. I know I am. We know we live in a three-dimensional world. But new physics now says to really understand the movement and the workings of the universe, there are somewhere between at least 10 and at least 26, maybe more, different dimensions of existence. Wow. Between 10 and 26, and we think 3 is hot stuff. It shouldn't shock us that there's still lots of room for mystery, miracles, and marveling. It isn't quite up to date yet in Kansas City or in the world. The bottom line is that because our God has perhaps 26 levels of or dimensions or more, there's always so much more to God than we can ever imagine. And out of all of this, the greatest mystery of all is that God has chosen to be with us. God has chosen to love us. God has chosen to strengthen us for the journey of life. And I would call that the greatest miracle and marvel of all, wouldn't you?